few years back, I worked as a nurse in the geriatric unit of a hospital in my hometown. There was one woman there with pale blue eyes, whose mind was still fantastically sharp, and her desire to socialize and make new friends set her apart from most other living things in that wing of the facility. That woman and I soon became close for this reason. Her name was Yana. I still miss her every day since she passed. The strange thing about Yana was not her accent, which I could only place vaguely as Eastern European, nor her disinclination to talk about her past, which meant I never learned exactly where she grew up. What fascinated me the most was that a strange young man, badly mutilated, plainly blind and mute, would visit her every single day. His hands appeared deformed, seemingly eroded at each digit down to the first knuckle. But each evening, a little after dinner time, he would visit. They would sit together, she would read to him, or sometimes sing in her frail old voice. Sometimes they would just hold hands in silence. Finally, I gathered up the courage to ask her about this man. And in a strange moment of openness, she agreed to tell me the story. My sister and I were the only surviving members of our family after our father passed away in 1964. These were very hard times for my old country, and father had grown so sick that we eventually were forced to allow him to starve, rather than waste food to comfort him as he inevitably died. Sister had been losing her mind little by little before all this happened, but I could see in her eyes, as we buried father, she had finally gone somewhere far away inside herself. I remember the crows, perched in thick groups like clots of preening black movement, watching us in the cemetery from all over the roofs. We moved to bury father quickly because the crows were all hungry as we were. Sister took to begging in the streets, sometimes trading sex for rides into the city nearby in hopes that her begging be more profitable there. It was during these terrible times that she conceived a son, Bastard, whose father wouldn't be known to her, but would certainly to some manner of predatory monster. This was the only kind of man my sister knew in those days of her life. The child was delivered healthily, happily, with a glowing spirit that broke my heart, as I knew that soon the young boy's eyes would look like mine, like my sister's. Even on the day he was born, I knew his beautiful, joyous innocence could not last. Sister didn't care for her son as she should have, as God and goodness alike demand that a mother should care for her child. She wouldn't change the boy's soiled diapers, leaving this to me instead, nor would forget to feed him even when his hungry wailing was ringing shrill and miserable through the whole house. Eventually, she began to take him out begging, using the child as a prop with which to elicit sympathy from strangers. She was most pleased when he looked his worst. He even complained to me once or twice that she could raise no money at all on days that he looked too healthy. I can never forget her final act of cruelty against Vasily. I named him myself after sister couldn't be bothered. It was morning. I'd walked outside in our yard to smell the air. Child was lying motionless on the ground there. Seemed to be quite dead, smeared as he was with his own blood. His little fingers and toes were black with frostbite. Sister hadn't even buried him in anything when she laid him down hours ago in the dark of night. Crows, which were all hungry as we were, had plucked his beautiful eyes and tongue from the still living body. I grabbed him up with tears already pouring from my cheeks, thinking I claimed a corpse. And it was only when he stirred against my breast that I realized he might be saved. I swaddled him as warmly as I could. I fed him something before rushing him down to the home of the town's only doctor. Nearly beat down the front door with my fist as he answered, with sleep still in his eyes because it was so early. I paid him with all the heirloom jewelry from mother that I had, all that I'd been able to hide from sister over the years. An hour or so later, the doctor told me that Vasily would live, but asked that he be allowed to monitor the child for the rest of the day, and I told him I'd be fine, as today would be a busy day for me, and indeed it was. By evening, I had smashed sister's head to a flattened pulp with a cast iron skillet from our stove. Obtained a train ticket from Passage out of our home country, and I made plans to give Vasily the best life that he could still have yet. Vasily, my son now, knows nothing about any of this, of course. I told him only that he was adopted away from a situation which he was likely not to survive. My full optimism I saw on his face when he was born survives to this day inside his heart. Sister, in all of her malice, had only managed to suppress it for a while, and now, almost 50 years later, he still visits his elderly mother every single day. She beamed with pride, and she finished her story. I would say no more. She was right. Vasily loved her so much, wore no resentment on his face for his injuries. He always seemed to be smiling pleasantly, even though in his blindness he often didn't know anyone was looking. He visited her every day until she died, and he was holding her hand when she passed. I knew from his interactions with hospital staff that he understood spoken English, and so at Yana's funeral, I told him that I had been a friend of his mother's. I told him that she was the most amazing, wonderful woman I had ever met. His sad, grateful smile grew deeper, and he nodded his head. His response came in sign language. She was. So I discovered the meaning of life. At least, that's what my eager customers are led to believe. See, two or three times a month, I post a listing titled The Meaning of Life to various auction sites. I couple it with a sappy picture of a sunset or a rainbow and a description that reads, "All views are subjective. Results may vary." Most people wouldn't bat an eye at such a ridiculous listing, but there are some gullible folks out there that take the bait. When the bidding ends, I usually take home anywhere between $5 to $12. After I've received my money via PayPal, I ship out the item. What is the item, you might ask? Well, I scribble down an inspirational quote or a life lesson onto a piece of paper, and I mail it out in your standard letter-size envelope. Quotes are usually from various writers, historical figures, or the Bible. Some of them include, "If light is in your heart, you'll find your way home. People will forget what you said. People will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel. It's never too late to be what you might have been." And that's it. One stamp, drop in the mailbox, my work is done. It's as simple as that. You might call me a scammer, a con artist, or perhaps even a plagiarist. And in truth, you're correct. I'm probably taking advantage of the naive people out there who are probably just looking for a sense of purpose in life. Also, I can make a quick buck. I'd like to think most people know it's bullshit and purchase my listing just to see what I'll send them. Besides, I'm a bachelor right out of college. So long as I can make a few dents in my phone bill and eat a packet of ramen each night, I'll sleep just fine. Now, as you might imagine, I receive quite a bit of hate mail. Learn to ignore angry emails, private messages on the auction sites, and as soon as I see that it's from one of my customers, it gets deleted. I do, however, receive the occasional snail mail. It's unavoidable, as my P.O. box is listed on all the envelopes I send out. It would be pretty easy for me to toss these letters in the trash with the rest of my junk, but I never can. Something about receiving a physical letter from someone, good or bad, compels me to read it. I feel that anyone who takes the time to write one deserves to have their voice heard, even if I don't really care what they have to say. The more physical letters I've received, the more amused I am by them. To paint a better picture, here are a few of my favorite quotes from my fan mail that I've received over the years. You're nothing but a glorified fortune cookie. You'll rot in hell for the sins you've committed, mark my words. And you're a real fucking piece of shit. Now then. I've reached a point where reading these letters has become the highlight of my week. I've even tacked up some of the better ones on a corkboard in my bedroom. You might think it's sick. I mean, a little messed up, but I think... oh, I think it's hilarious. Not all the letters I receive are bad. There's one guy by the name of Red, no last name, that's all he ever writes above his return address, who mails me constantly. He sends me inspirational quotes in exchange for mine. I assume he's a repeat buyer who enjoys paying for and receiving cheerful messages in his mailbox every now and again. A man of class and dignity. My kind of customer. The first quote that Red ever sent me was, "The fear of death follows me from the fear of life. A man who lives fully is prepared to die at any time." It's Mark Twain. This was a great first impression, as Mark Twain is one of my favorite authors, and the return quote was much appreciated. As such, I hung it up next to the hate mail on my corkboard. Some of the things Red sends me, however, they're not corkboard material. Some of the quotes he sends are morbid and depressing, and other times, he'll mail me small packages containing little trinkets that I have no use for. It's a little weird, but I figure the guy is depressed, just needs a friend. Maybe the quotes he buys from me are the only things that he has to look forward to each morning. Perhaps the things he sends me are his way of saying thanks. To me, it's validation that what I'm doing isn't completely sleazy. But here's where things get weird. Today I received another envelope from Red. I smiled when I pulled it out of my P.O. box. His letters and gifts, no matter how odd, were just as much, if not more, of a highlight to my week than that endless entertaining hate mail. Upon opening the envelope, however, my smile vanished. Inside was a photograph of me, taken up close to my bedroom window. On the back of the photograph was another one of Red's quotes. "You look so alone. What's the meaning in your life?"